Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
A pauper, a pirate, a poet, a pawn and a king. I've been up and down and over and out, and I know one thing. Each time I find myself flat on my face, I pick myself up and get back in the race. That's life.
That's Savage. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Sing it, Frank.
Baby, but my heart just ain't gonna buy it. And if I didn't think it was worth one single try, I'd jump right on a big bird and then I'd fly. I've been a puppet, a pauper, a pirate, a poet, a pawn and a king. I've been up and down and over and out, and I know one thing. Each time I find myself laying flat on my face, I just pick myself up and get back in the race.
It is the theme song of the Savage Nation. It's called That's Life, and of course, on the Savage Nation, we also play a Latin piece called Pata Vivir, which is to life. Let's hear Pata Vivir on the Savage Nation. For the folks who like a little salsa music out there, we'll have a little Pata Vivir. Because at the end of the day, the good shall survive and the bad shall not. Come on, Frankie, sing it to the end of the line. Another theme song of the Savage Nation, to life, to life, to life. We are surrounded by death worshippers in the Obama administration. They're in favor of abortion, euthanasia, in favor of destroying the U.S. Constitution. And we have to maintain our confidence during this horrible time. Obama is a liar. In fact, all through Obama's speech, I kept screaming at the TV, you liar, you. And when Joe Wilson screamed out, you're a liar, I felt like giving him a Presidential Medal of Freedom. Did you hear what happened last night? Obama bald-faced lied when he said that the health care reform package will not insure illegal immigrants. I'll tell you why Obama lied. Although perhaps they won't insure them initially, Obama is secretly working to grant amnesty to illegal immigrants. And once he pushes socialized medicine through, tell me what's going to happen when the 30 million illegal immigrants become citizens. Why, presto, they're entitled to all of the benefits of American citizens, and they will get the health care, the free health care that they're not entitled to. So, you know, he was lying. Wilson was right. He should be given a Medal of Freedom for this, but he won't be. The Republicans won't support him because, by and large, they're ducking and covering. So that's one big thing. Play clip one so they know what we're talking about in the Saturday.
There are also those who claim that our reform efforts would ensure illegal immigrants. This, too, is false. The reforms I'm proposing would not apply to those who are here illegal.
So, dissent in Congress? That's not permitted when you have fascisti running the country. No. Well, here's a response by a limp-wristed Republican named Boehner on health care, clip 19. Hello, clip 19, anyone?
Illegal immigrants wouldn't get government benefits. But the nonpartisan Congressional Research Service on August 26th says, in part, H.R. 3200 does not contain any restrictions on non-citizens participating in and paying for coverage available through the exchange, whether the non-citizens are legally or illegally present or in the United States temporarily or permanently. And this CRS report makes it pretty clear.
Now, Obama also brought up tort reform for a minute, but he didn't explain what he was talking about. Do you have that clip on the tort reform yesterday? I'd like to hear it if you do. Play it whenever you might be able to dig it up. I know you're all very busy there on the other side of the board. You don't have it? You do or you don't? Okay, see, I have a crack staff here on the Savage Nation. In between sniffing glue and picking their ears. This is unbelievable. How could you not have it? I talked with you about it last night. Unbelievable to me. Just unbelievable. Okay, moving right along. Let's move to clip 13 where Chairman Barack Hussein, Mao Tse-tung Obama attacks anyone who disagrees with him. Clip 13.
The best example is the claim made not just by radio and cable talk show hosts, but by prominent politicians that we plan to set up panels of bureaucrats with the power to kill off senior citizens. Now, such a charge would be laughable if it weren't so cynical and irresponsible. It is a lie, plain and simple.
Why? Because you say it is your own brother, excuse me, Rahm Emanuel's brother, Ezekiel Emanuel, has published papers saying that people 65 years old have lived longer than people 25 years old, and therefore they've had more health care, and therefore they're not entitled to as much health care as a younger person. So in other words, what is the truth? You decide what the truth is. Now, last night during Obama's infomercial and, let's say, self-aggrandizing talk fest, he made some other whoppers that were clearly lies. He said that he was going to look into tort reform. Let's hear it.
Now, I don't believe malpractice reform is a silver bullet. But I've talked to enough doctors to know that defensive medicine may be contributing to unnecessary costs. So I'm proposing that we move forward on a range of ideas about how to put patient safety first and let doctors focus on practicing medicine. I know that the Bush administration considered authorizing demonstration projects in individual states to test these ideas. I think it's a good idea. And I'm directing my Secretary of Health and Human Services to move forward on this initiative today.
Okay, now he's lying for two reasons. He starts by talking about medical malpractice claims, which we all know are out of control. He then says he's going to look into tort reform. And who does he turn it over to? The head of Health and Human Services, Sebelius, who happens to have been the chairman in Kansas of the American Trial, of the Trial Lawyers Association of Kansas. Kathleen Sebelius is part and parcel of the problem, not the solution. So for him to say he's turning it over to a trial lawyer to look into getting rid of the trial lawyers is equivalent to saying that he believes in freedom of speech. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. As the noose tightens around the neck of America's media, it's interesting to me that a New York Times reporter who had been warned repeatedly not to go into this area where the Taliban had a stronghold in Afghanistan would go in there anyway. Being a liberal, of course, he suffers from the mental disorder called liberalism, and he thinks because he's so good, they would understand him. And, of course, they wouldn't hurt him because he was a liberal and he was on their side. Well, of course, he was deranged, as are most of these reporters, especially the type from the New York Times. He goes into the Taliban stronghold. gets captured. The British send in crack commandos, drop by helicopter. They have a shootout. They save this ingrate from the New York Times. One of the British commandos dies, and the New York Times doesn't even apologize for the death of the British soldier. Instead, they attack the British soldiers, saying that they came in shooting. They almost had a negotiation. Had they only waited, they could have done it for money. How come you use the military? It's astounding to me how deranged liberalism can really be. It really is astounding to me, the danger they're putting us all in. And so, therefore, we go back again to the chief offender, Barack Obama. The man is living in a dream world, and he is a double talker, if not an outright liar, when he says that the health care bill that he's proposing will not aid illegal immigrants. He's lying for two reasons. One, because there's a clause in it that says they may help them. And B, if he gets this bill through, he will then push to have illegal aliens made legal, and then they will be qualified for it, further bankrupting America. Number two, he says he's into tort reform because he knows that's the big 400-pound gorilla in the room. Rein in the lawyers, you could save $500 billion to $1 trillion a year. He says he's going to look into it, but he gives no examples of what he's going to do. And then he says he's going to give it Kathleen Sebelius to look into tort reform when she was the head of the Kansas Trial Lawyers Association. So he's lying every step of the way, lying, lying, lying. Do you understand this? Which is why they want talk radio silenced, or they want phonies and talk radio left in the business, why they want fake conservatives on the air as opposed to the real conservatives. They don't even want real liberals on the air anymore. I want to tell you the truth. If you think they want real liberals and real conservatives on the radio, you're mistaken. They want a shadow game of fake liberal versus fake conservative, but basically people who support the structure, the power structure. That's all they want. So there it is. New York WOR. Jason, go ahead, please.
The exchange was not worth it. A courageous soldier's life was lost for a reporter who went there knowing there were dangers. And what even outrages me even more is that America's national security, or if there was a soldier's life at risk, you better believe the papers would have reported it. But they kept it silent because it was one of their own, and they wanted to protect one of their own. But they didn't care about this nation with all the leaks that they've done, especially the New York Times. It's an absolute disgrace. I feel bad for the family. If I had been a soldier, I would have refused to go in to protect this vermin. I could not believe it. I'm outraged, and the reaction of the newspaper is a disgrace. And these courageous soldiers' life is
well. Do you remember yesterday I said the headline that the vermin in the AP was running was Taliban free, or wait, New York Times reporter freed by Taliban? You had to read the article to find out that it was that he was not freed, but its soldier died to free him. Could you believe how low the Associated Press has become?
Not only was the soldier died.
The same verminous scum at the Associated Press who will not cover the fact that Michael Savage has been silenced in Britain. The same vermin will not tell you that it was a soldier who died to free the New York Times reporter. By the way, the New York Times reporter was warned over and over again, don't go into that area. You're aware of that, Jason?
I am absolutely aware of it, and I'm also aware the others on the radio station have not stood up and supported you, these fake so-called conservatives. It's a disgrace. I used to listen to others, but they don't stand up for what's right. And the nation should be backing you. There used to be a time in this country who used to say, I may not agree with you, but I die for your right to say it. Where are those people right now protecting you, Dr. Michael Savage?
Why don't you ask the wall banger? Why don't you ask the golfer? Why don't you ask the leprechaun? They all wrap themselves in the flag of freedom. Why don't you ask them where they are when they're needed? And I want to remind the golfer, the wall banger, and the lep, that when they came for Michael Savage, they didn't raise their voices. They were glad to see me banned in Britain, just as they'd be glad to see me knocked off the radio across America. But they will become for eventually. Trust me, the very same Obama forces will come for them eventually. They don't know that, but they should know that. Don't you think, Jason?
I absolutely think that, and I tell you, if they come for Dr. Michael Savage, millions strong will stand by your side, and millions strong will protect you. It's why people aren't listening to the leprechaun anymore. I used to listen to those, and I got tired of hearing the Republicans are always right, the Democrats are always wrong.
I know the leprechaun lost his radio show because it didn't work, and it's only a matter of time till the people finally become sophisticated enough to understand what's going on in this country right now. Right now, we have a dictatorship in this country, and they're trying to pull a noose around the neck of anyone in radio who stands up to the Obama tyranny. That's exactly what's going on here.
And I couldn't agree with you more. And let me let it go on record. My grandfather fought this for this country. My father fought in Vietnam, two terms in Vietnam. I absolutely love this country. And what's happening in this country is a disgrace. And more people need to get on these phones, need to call the politicians, and need to start standing up and be heard for what is right. And we need to stop putting soldiers in harm for people that lives aren't worth saving. And
that's You're right. That's right. Why did the soldier have to die to save a New York Times reporter who should not have been in that Taliban area to begin with? The New York Times owes that family a monster reparation for the loss of that British commando. To me, one British commando is worth every journalist in the New York Times. Thanks for the call, Jason. It's a sad story. The man is dead and buried, you know, or not buried yet, but he's dead. And it's all because a reporter thought that he was so good, meaning he was so liberal, that the Taliban wouldn't harm him. It's the same as liberals in the San Francisco area, the New York area. I knew them. They go into areas that they know they can get killed or hurt, and they think that the people in those areas are going to know that they're good and they're not going to be hurt. They just don't understand the reality that they're living in. They are naive at best, fools at worst, and they bring danger upon the entire nation, in my opinion. But let's go down to the brass tacks, so to speak. So the congressman yells out liar. Nancy Pelosi, her fake smile drops from her face. Suddenly you see a different Nancy Pelosi instead of the I don't know how you people can take looking at her. I just don't know how you can handle it. Doesn't it put some kind of sense of disgust in you to see that fixed smile on that woman's face? And did you see her face drop when a congressman yelled out liar? Didn't you see a hint at the real Nancy Pelosi? I did. And did you see how nervous they got when there was any mark of dissent during that shameful display? It's unbelievable to me. Anyway, I think we've made our point here on Obama. Let's move on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Again and again last night, the president lied. He said there may be those, particularly the young and healthy, who still want to take the risk and go without coverage. And then he says the problem is such irresponsible behavior costs all the rest of us money. Obama went on to say if there are affordable options and people still don't sign up for health insurance, it means we pay for those people's expensive emergency room visits. What he's saying to you if you're young and you've chosen to not buy health insurance is that you're going to be forced. Let me explain it again to you young people out there who may be Obama-tized or you don't really know what's going on. You are going to be forced by the Obama administration to buy insurance. Your cash is going to be used to bring down the cost of covering the less fortunate, including the illegal alien. You are going to be paying for senior citizens and illegal aliens. You, the young, are going to be forced to pay for it. You see, you don't even understand how he's lying here. He's actually telling you it's good for you to pay for a government health plan, even if you don't want to. So he's lying. He can't be honest about anything. Then he says the plan that he's proposing will cost $900 billion over 10 years. Now, how did he come up with that number? Has a government estimate ever been accurate? Has a government projection of costs ever been within 300% of what the actual costs are? Then he says we've estimated that most of this plan can be paid for by finding savings within the existing healthcare system, a system that is currently full of waste and abuse. Well, that's true. But when he talks about waste and abuse, why doesn't he talk about the lawyers who are running rampant like wild rats through the healthcare system, like John Edwards did, raping hospitals, in my opinion, destroying doctors' reputations, in my opinion, killing healthcare strictly for greed? Why didn't he talk about the waste that is caused by forcing doctors to get extra tests for fear of being sued by these lice? Why didn't he talk about the costs of health care that are doubled because the doctors fear lice with law degrees who will sue them if they don't recommend a specialist, even though the patient may not really need a specialist? So he says one thing, but it doesn't mean anything because there was no reality attached to it. Then he says, first, I will not sign a plan that adds one dime to our deficits, either now or in the future period. Well, what does that mean? What does that mean? How can he mean that? What does he mean by one dime? Because he made the same promise and broke it regarding taxes on Americans earning less than $250,000 a year. So I believe that the no new deficits pledge is a lie, just as the net spending cut that he promised will never be realized. In other words, the congressman who screamed liar was really the only good American in the audience. The rest sat and listened to the man lie through the entire speech. And one other thing, just talk about style rather than substance. I've given you some substantive arguments against Obama, and I hope that you've listened to them because all of them are true. Here's what I'd like to ask you. What kind of nation do we live in that we have to listen to an infomercial that is interrupted every sentence by clapping from a bunch of clowns in his own party? Now, I recognize Bush did the same thing and had the clowns on the Republican side clap every 3 minutes. How can we, the people, pay attention to a speech if every minute idiots are screaming and yelling and yay, yay, yay? It sounded like a very bad reality show. This is not a dignified nation. You look in from another nation, you're looking at this country where there's no debate, no parliamentary system of actual debate, no capacity for debate because there is none allowed other than on talk radio, which they're trying to destroy across the country one station at a time. What kind of nation is this where a president gets to give, in essence, an infomercial for an hour straight whenever he wants, and there's no reaction? Instead, there's just applause every minute, which drowns out the thought process itself. So I think I've made my points as well as I'd like to. He lied throughout the whole speech. And I have no idea why they're focusing on health insurance companies. Now, I want to say something to you about this. I don't have any money invested in health insurance companies. I have no money invested in stocks related to health insurance companies or health companies. In fact, I don't own any stocks so far as I know. I don't have any money in stocks so far as I know. I don't have any faith in the stock market myself. If you do, good luck to you. I just don't. I don't gamble. Now, having said that, I want to tell you that I grew up in a family that struggled somewhat. My father was a small businessman, started with a pushcart on the streets of New York. I'm not ashamed to tell you that, an immigrant with nothing. And I don't know what he did, but he wound up with his own little store selling antiquities, and he made a reasonably good living. We had a small brick-attached house, one car. Mom didn't work. He was a sole breadwinner. And when he got his heart attack, his first one at age 47, there was no money coming in. He had was in the hospital, the oxygen tent. There was no health care, no health insurance. There was just no money coming in. I had to help. In fact, I left college for one semester to go to work to help. Now, I want to ask you something. Trust me when I tell you, as I listen to this whole health care debate, I listen with two minds. One is my current state of mind. And the other is the mind of my deceased father, who I would assume would represent tens of millions of Americans today who are poor or poorer, who are worried about losing everything they have if they should get sick or if someone in their family should get sick. And I say, well, what would they be thinking about Obama's speech? And by and large, they would hang on every word and think he's doing the right thing in what he's saying because he is holding out false promises to them, as do all politicians, and so do all demagogues. False promises are hung like carrots in front of a horse's nose to get them to agree with the whip over their hindquarters. So what I'm saying to you is I recognize that the speech was not given for a person in my position. It was given for the tens of millions of poor people in this country who want the government to bail them out, who want the government to take it from those who have and support those who do not have, who want to take it from the so-called rich without understanding that without the rich, there would be nothing in this country. Without the taxes that the upper 1% pay, the entire economy would collapse. The upper 1% earners pay 50% of all income taxes in the country. I want you to remember that. And there's only so much you can get out of people until they throw in the towel and say, you know what? I'm not investing in a new business. I'm not expanding the plant. I'm not taking any more chances because it isn't worth it. Let them all go to hell. And what happens then is you wind up with a declining economy, a declining income base, a declining tax base. All you got to do is look at California and see what happens with miserable, horrendous leadership. And you understand that Obama is leading us to the level of one salami hanging in a butcher shop, along the lines of what you may have seen in pictures of the ex-Soviet Union before the wall came down, or in Poland before Glasnost, when there was a line around the block to buy one salami. And the reason that happened is because the butcher wouldn't invest in buying the cow, because he knew the government would take most of the profit that he made for themselves. So why should the butcher borrow money or sell his silver to buy a cow to cut up the meat if the government's going to steal it in the form of taxes or penalties? This is what happens with socialism. This is why Obama is a very dangerous liar, in my opinion. And this is why talk radio is the greatest threat to the status quo in this nation. They don't want truth whatsoever. They want to continue to hold out the lies that they're going to save you with government spending. Now, I might be all for it if it was truly generated by savings, but I know that's a lie, because the very corrupt individuals who are feasting off the medical system now are going to continue to feast off the medical system tomorrow. The number one would be the lawyers. The others would be the healthcare providers themselves. And I don't mean the hospitals. I mean all of the middlemen along the way. The fraud is overwhelming. It's in the hundreds of billions of dollars. Did Obama once say he's going to create a whole department to look into actual fraud, fraudulent claims, fakers who are faking illness, fakers who are making up illness, fake doctors, fake chiropractors, working with lawyers to rob hundreds of billions of dollars out of the system? Did he mention that once? Did he talk about all of the fakers in the medical system? Did he mention the fake cases that lawyers are ginning up across the country? No. So again, as I said to you, ladies and gentlemen, I'm giving you kind of an interesting, I think, presentation from one man, which is, I'm speaking to you as I am, Michael Savage, today, reasonably well off, because I worked for every dime I have for well over more than a half a century. No one gave me a dime. I inherited nothing. I've been knocked down on my behind many times, and I've gotten up every time, dusted myself off, and moved forward, sometimes taking 20 years to get back on my feet. So here I am on my feet, and I see a government that says, you're the target. You're the target because you have something. We want to take it from you, and we want to give it to people who don't have it. Well, I warn those of you who don't have it, what happens with this psychology. All you got to do is look at Poland before Glasnost. Look at Cuba today and ask yourself, do you really want to live there? I'll be right back.
Savage.
I have no interest in putting insurance companies out of business. They provide a legitimate service and employ a lot of our friends and neighbors. I just want to hold them accountable.
I heard that line, and you know what entered my mind? Who's going to hold you accountable? He just wants to hold them accountable. Hey, I'm all for it, Mr. Obama. But who's going to hold you accountable? We don't have an opposition party to hold you accountable. Your own party are a bunch of stooges, yes men. Yes, women. So who's going to hold the president accountable? Who's going to hold Rahm Emanuel accountable? Who's going to hold David Axelrod accountable when his own son has a company that allegedly is going to benefit from all of this? Who's going to hold them accountable? Play that again and listen carefully to the breathlessness at the end of it.
I have no interest in putting insurance companies out of business. They provide a legitimate service and employ a lot of our friends and neighbors. I just want to hold them accountable.
Well, that's nice. Who's going to hold you accountable? Who's going to hold Rahm Emanuel accountable? Who's going to hold Barney Frank accountable, a man who busted the banks with his Fannie Mae debacle? Has he ever been held accountable? Shall I go down the list of other Democrats who have not been held accountable? Who's going to hold you accountable with this? Nobody. Now, let's get down to the insurance companies themselves. Of course, they are profit-oriented and probably make too much money. But I could say the same thing about baseball stars. I'd like to hold them accountable. I'd like to hold football stars accountable. In my mind, they get far too much money. Most of them are illiterate morons who are just gifted with regard to throwing a ball and running. I don't happen to value those skills. Perhaps you do. And many of you will say, well, the marketplace should determine their value. Why not hold the baseball teams accountable for the amount of money that they're spending on baseball stars or basketball stars or football stars? You could say they're not held accountable. Couldn't you say that? So where it begins right now is with insurance companies. Where it ends, that is so-called which companies will be held accountable for grotesque profits, anybody knows. Could be oil companies tomorrow, couldn't it? You could say they have no right to make that much profit. I might agree with you. I might agree with you because it's a monopoly. If the oil business were not a monopoly, I wouldn't be saying this. But the oil business is a monopoly. It's as bad as it was when John D. Rockefeller owned almost all the oil companies in America. Teddy Roosevelt came along and he said bust the trusts. And he tried to rein in John D. Rockefeller by creating antitrust legislation. People cheered. So what did Rockefeller's lawyers do? There was no longer a single Standard Oil company. He made a new Standard Oil company in every state of the Union, Standard Oil of New Jersey, Standard Oil of Pennsylvania, Standard Oil of Ohio, Standard Oil of Michigan, Standard Oil of Indiana. And so they got around the antitrust laws by creating multiple Standard Oils. The government couldn't beat them down. So as I say, it depends upon, you know, which industry the president wants to focus on. The reason he's focusing on health care right now and health insurance companies is because that's the first thing that socialist communist dictators do is go to the health care. I've told you that Castro did it. I told you that the communists that I knew years and years ago who I detested used to get up and give speeches at universities about Castro's Cuba and how wonderful it was and how he provided health care for all. Of course, none of them would go down there for the health care when they needed it. They would go to Dr. Berkowitz at the University of Miami, as do most of the Cuban elite, because when they need doctoring, they don't go to the Cuban doctors at the University of Havana. They either fly in doctors from Miami secretly, or they fly to Miami or Houston for real medical care. They don't get it in their own country. But don't ask Representative Barbara Lee to give you that fact of reality. So I've given you my opinions, several different opinions on these issues. And I made up your own mind. I think the guy was like every other politician last night, no better, no worse. I don't think he lied any more than Bush lied. I think he lied about the same amount. He's just more articulate. I wouldn't say he was particularly charismatic. He has a good deep voice, and he was able to do it in good style. But basically, it's what is known as sophistry. He's a sophist of a very high caliber. And he engaged in sophistry last night. I mean, Plato wrote about it, or Aristotle wrote about sophistry. All style and no substance. Because if you analyze the substance, as I've tried to do in a few short areas here, tort reform, lie, no health care for illegal aliens, double talk and lie, we're going to not spend one dime that we don't save, lie. I mean, all of it, it's all known as sophistry. And so, therefore, he's no different than the last president, other than he has a better speaking voice. And he may be more appealing in that regard. That's about it. So I wasn't too shocked by what he did. I just was turned off by it because I saw the same old all over again. And I couldn't listen to the clapping every 2 minutes. How in the heck can you analyze a speech that you can't even hear, that's drowned out by this stupidity? And Nancy Pelosi with the candies in her mouth. You know, can't somebody tell her that she has an ick factor with the sucking candy in her mouth with the fixed smile? It's eerie. I don't know about you, it's eerie to see that woman sucking on candy with a fixed smile up on the dais there. There's something embarrassing to live in a nation like this. I made my points. I think I'd rather talk about cat litter in the next hour than talk about Obama and healthcare one more minute. I'd rather talk about what you think of the best cat litter or things of that nature, or the best method of shoveling horse manure on a farm, than talk about what Obama said last night. So if you don't mind, I'm going to move on. You know, I'm just going to move on. It's just, how much can you take of this? Here's a little story out of San Francisco to make you puke. No death penalty for triple slaying. The district attorney, Kamala Harris, sticks to her pledge. Alleged gang member Edwin Ramos will at most serve life if convicted. He is the man who shot a father and two sons who were not gang members and killed them. And this district attorney, who now wants to be the attorney general of the state of California, can you imagine this? A woman who was so incompetent, so anti-police, that she was invited by Obama to visit the White House. In other words, she's so incompetent and so un-American, so anti-police, that she was finally noticed by Rahm Emanuel and David Axelrod, invited to the White House. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. We can talk about anything except this health care stuff, because I think we've covered it, don't you think? New York City, WR. Dave, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I just wanted to thank you and let you know that you're being heard by the Army in Mosul, Iraq.
How? How are they picking it up? On which website?
I don't know what website. We didn't get, my son and I didn't get to talk in length about it, but he almost verbatim told me what you stated on your show about the rise and fall of the Roman Empire. And when I asked him, how did you know that? Where did you hear that? He says one of the soldiers in my unit downloaded it off his computer, and then they all sat around and talked about it. So you're having an effect in Iraq.
That's beautiful, because my heart goes out to you and your son and all of the other brave men who are fighting for our freedom over here. And I hope to God that they're all safe. That's all I could say. Let me send you a copy, Dave, of Banned in Britain. And also for your son, can I send you right now a copy of one of my other books, perhaps something a little lighter reading, Psychological Nudity? Perhaps you'd like to read that in Iraq?
Certainly. I'll make sure it gets to them, sir.
And stay on the line. Two free books go out to Dave in New York, Banned in Britain and Psychological Nudity.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Is the Savage Nation. For the last hour, I've been talking about my objections to Obama's rhetoric, because most of it was fraudulent. I also commented that I tried to see this through the eyes of a poor person. I also commented that they're going to force young people who right now opt to have no health insurance to buy health insurance in order to pay for the costs of maintaining illegal aliens and others. So if you're young and you're an Obama supporter, beware of the fact that you're being hoodwinked by the master Pied Piper. You don't even know that you're going to be paying for health reform, because he didn't make it clear that you're going to be forced to buy health insurance that the government owns. He lied on many terms, but I also said for the hour that in that regard, he's no different than most politicians, other than people believe him. In the past, people generally were skeptical of politicians. That is when they were Republicans and such. But now that we have a socialist in power, everything he says must be true. So I'd rather move on. I mean, how many different things can I say about the same thing? What else would you like to talk about? I mean, we still have the stream of consciousness segments from earlier in the week, which I still love. I think they're some of the best things I've done for years. And then we have pieces from my Freedom of Speech Award And I'm going to go to open mic at 1-800-449-8255. How about anything except Obama and health reform? How about food? How about restaurants? How about automobiles? How about boats? How about animals? How about dogs? How about science? How about history? How about literature? How about poetry? How about Chinese calligraphy? How about Japanese chopsticks? I mean, anything except Obama, please. There must be more to talk about than the president's, sophistry. Come on. I mean, enough is enough. An hour is enough today, isn't it? I'm sure you can get it from somewhere else. You can turn on somebody else on another station. There's a guy out there who sounds like he's having a hysterectomy without anesthesia who claims to be a great conservative. You know, he sounds like they're giving him a hysterectomy without anesthesia, and he calls himself a conservative, even though he was a lawyer in the White House. So you can listen to him on this. He's a genius. He steals every one of my other ideas, from dogs to talking over the president during a speech. I mean, what's next? How many different ways can the hysterectomy steal from me? Is there no one other? They just want to talk. They're obsessed with this. Okay, I don't know what to say. Then we're going to play a segment right now on the Savage Nation. Since I've been banned in Britain, and since you don't want to hear anything about it, I'm going to play something for you that's 47 seconds long. And this is clip 25 in Savage's, a highlight from my Freedom of Speech Award from 2007. Play 25.
I want to define satire, ridicule, and sarcasm for those of you who love talk radio. Satire is the use of irony, sarcasm, ridicule, or the like in exposing, denouncing, or deriding vice, folly, etc. What is ridicule? We use it on talk radio all the time if we know how. It is speech or action intended to cause contemptuous laughter at a person or thing. Derision. Derision, my friends, is ridicule. That's part of freedom of speech. And finally, sarcasm should be used all the time if you know how to do it. What is sarcasm? Harsh or bitter derision or irony. A sharply ironical taunt, sneering or cutting remark, a review full of sarcasms. That's freedom of speech, my friends.
All right. So in other words, I try to define somewhat of a freedom of speech when I won the Talkers Magazine Freedom of Speech Award in 07. And politicians, as you well know, are very thin-skinned. They despise ridicule and sarcasm. So if I define Nancy Pelosi as a woman with a fixed smile who is constantly sucking on a candy, she wouldn't like that. She'd like to have my voice silenced. If I define Obama as a man who is full of style with no substance and I call him an imposter, you could say that is... it's certainly not satirical. It's not even ridicule. It's not even sarcasm. And actually, it's a fact of life. It's reality. Certainly, he doesn't like anyone commenting in a negative way. It was interesting when Obama walked in last night, how happy he looked. He looked happy again because he was loved by all. I saw the old Obama, the one that all of the liberals had he preys upon since he was a young boy in Hawaii. The way liberals will always seek out a person of his nature and his type to lavish their praises upon. I saw a man who was used to praise, who had not been getting it lately, suddenly being praised by all of the sycophants who are rolling in the money that they're stealing from the Treasury. And I saw a happy president. Of course he would be unhappy with anyone who would satirize or ridicule or use sarcasm towards him or disagree with him in any way. As all dictators are, they're very thin-skinned. Chavez doesn't permit any such things. He's closing down radio stations. And here in America, the same thing is happening in other ways. San Diego, John, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, has Brian Lamb going to show you live on C-SPAN in your keynote speech, or is that going to be put on the shelf for nobody to see?
Oh, old Brian Lamb. Ba, 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 ba. You mean when I speak in Washington on October 27th to that important conference on freedom of speech? My suspicion is that Brian Lamb will be told what to do by Nancy Pelosi or Rahm Emanuel, and the little man will do what he is told to do. After all, he lives off their largesse, so the little man on C-SPAN will do what he is told to do. I doubt that you'll be able to see it. But we're gonna the organizer of the conference... We'll have it videotaped, and I suspect we'll have an availability, you know, to either put it out on my website or for you to get it afterwards. I don't know if it could be done live, you know what I mean?
Yeah, okay. You have a great day.
Thanks. Yeah, no, Brian Baba Lamb. Wisconsin, Ray, on a totally different topic, thank God. What's on your mind, Ray?
Hi, Dr. Savage. Privilege to talk to you. Last week or the week before, you talked about the benefits of vitamin E, and I could have sworn it was like 15,000 IUs of vitamin E. I didn't quite...
No. It was... Okay, I'm sorry. We were talking about vitamin A at the time. I wasn't feeling well, and I always revert to vitamin A therapy. When I really start to feel something heavy coming down and vitamin C won't touch it, I usually go to very powerful vitamin A dosages. And usually within a day, I will snap back from anything. And with the vitamin A, the tolerance for it is much higher than you may think, number one. However, you have to be cautious because vitamin A is fat soluble. As such, it is stored in your adipose tissue. It's not easily excreted, unlike vitamin C, which is water soluble, which you will eliminate. Excesses will be eliminated. Excesses of vitamin A can be toxic. So the issue is how much is therapeutic and how much is toxic. So that issue becomes one of thought and consideration. And that depends upon your age, your weight, and your state of health. My suspicion is that you can easily take 50 to 100,000 IUs of vitamin A when you're very sick for a few days and you won't have any negative results from it. However, when you're healthy, you want to keep it to a much lower dosage. I think, what's the RDA on vitamin A? It's much too low anyway, but it's in the few thousand units a day. So does that answer your question?
Yes, it does, and thank you, sir.
And the vitamin A form that you use is very important. I use drops put out. You can only get them in the really real health food stores, not the chains. The authentic health food stores that carry the tinctures and such is the place you're going to find real vitamin A in the right method of administering it. Others can be very hard to get. Any delivery system that's really going to work. There are cases you should know of Arctic explorers who hunted polar bears, shot the polar bear, ate the polar bear, and died after eating the polar bear liver, because the polar bear liver is one of the richest natural sources of vitamin A. I am talking about in the millions of units. In other words, if you eat polar bear liver, you're getting millions of units of vitamin A, and you'll die from it, just to give you some idea of magnitude of differential here. But this is something that you're not going to hear about from your ordinary health practitioner. They're not aware of the benefits of any of these vitamins. In fact, they've been miseducated by the American Medical Association to tell you that only burning, cutting, and poisoning will help you. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Healthcare is in the wind. Everyone's talking about it. And I've spent 30 years of my life researching, writing about self-help with vitamins, nutrition, and such. So give me another minute on this. Let me go back to vitamin A for a second. I want to reiterate something so that you don't get the mistaken notion that you know exactly how much to use. Vitamin A can be very toxic above a certain amount, and I would recommend you never use more than 50,000 units per day, except in extraordinary circumstances. So again, the optimal dose would be determined by the response that you get from it. Start with 10,000 units a day when you're sick and increase it slowly. And then once you get the optimum response, the dose may be decreased to the appropriate maintenance dose, which would have to be the RDA, which is pretty low. Remember, one IU of vitamin A or any other IU is equal to 0.3 micrograms. It's very hard for you to figure out what that means. But should you suspect vitamin A deficiency? Well, do you have problems with the surfaces of your body? Skin, hair, nails, night blindness, mucosa? Or do you have repeated colds that are not responsive to ascorbic acid? These conditions might indicate you're looking into vitamin A. Now, many people will use beta-carotene instead, which is a vitamin A precursor. And I have nothing against using beta carotene. I've just found it has no effect on me whatsoever. I have found that only vitamin A has a medical reaction in me. So, and again, one last point on this vitamin A business. Arctic explorers, remember I told you some of them died from eating polar bear liver? Well, Arctic explorers learned that polar bear liver was dangerous going back to the 16th century when some explorers first lost their skin after eating polar bear liver. 1 pound of polar bear liver would contain over 30 million units of vitamin A. And again, a last point. Many of you could be deficient in vitamin A today. Why? It's found mainly in animal and fish livers. You don't eat that anymore because you're on a low cholesterol diet. You probably don't drink milk. You don't use butter. You don't use eggs. Again, the obsession with cholesterol reduction and fat reduction. So most of the vitamin A that Americans used to get is out of their diet. Now, yellow, orange, and green plants contain carotene, which is converted to vitamin A in the body. But the chances are you're not getting enough of that anyway. So as I say to you, there are subclinical deficiencies and overt classical deficiencies in vitamins all along the spectrum in this country, which accounts for the increased number of various diseases that were once eliminated in this country. Okay? I think I've covered the waterfront for now on that subject, just because I'm sick and tired of talking about medical care without talking about what you can do about it. I mean, you want to talk about self-care? That's a great topic. For years, I wrote about that. I was obsessed with it. Why? Because my dad died young of a heart attack, so did Grandpa. So I was obsessed in college. I started wondering, what in the heck? I'll never forget when my father came home from the hospital, the doctor put him on a low-salt diet. Why? I used to look at it. He was not allowed to use sodium chloride, God rest his soul. They gave him KCL, potassium chloride. So I was a young biology student. I said, why would they put him on potassium, not sodium? Well, then I learned because sodium increases blood pressure and they want people to have lower blood pressure. They put him on potassium chloride. So I started to think, if the doctors would tell my poor father after a heart attack to reduce his salt intake, why didn't they tell him before? Why didn't they tell a poor man to cut down on salt before he got sick? Why didn't they tell him to cut down on the fats before he got sick? Either they didn't know or they didn't want him to know because there was no money in it. So I started to think, if potassium is better than sodium, what else might be involved in the development of heart disease? And that was the beginning of my long, long road of investigations and reading everything I get my hands on, working with the smartest men in the world in the orthomolecular medical movement, the smartest doctors in the world. That doesn't mean there aren't great doctors other than them, but at that time, these were the smartest, most advanced minds in the world. Linus Pauling, Abe Hoffer, Bob Cathcart, Richard Cunyan, the smartest men in the world in vitamin therapy. And they were all reviled by the American Medical Association. Every one of them were giants, and the Lilliputians in the regular medical world sneered at them the same way I am sneered at in the political world. They were sneered at in the medical world. So I'm used to this. Trust me. I have seen this behavior in virtually every sphere of learning, which is first you say that the person who is putting forth these ideas is a heretic. He's crazy. He doesn't know what he's talking about. And then you use ridicule on that person. You ridicule them and you say that they're this and you say that they're that. Eventually, though, there will be acceptance of my ideas, just as there's been an acceptance of vitamin therapy. There will be an acceptance of conservative ideology across the American spectrum. In fact, it's already happened. It's not happened, of course, amongst the mentally deranged in the newspaper business and the television business. They are the last. They are like the silent movie stars while the talkies have come to town. And I am in the talkies, very much in the talkies. I am the talking picture show star, and those writing for newspapers are still in the silent movie era. And, of course, they will become as extinct as the silent movie actors did, as sure as I'm standing here. But the fact is that if you analyze it, as we've seen from Rasmussen and others, more Americans self-identify as conservatives than any other category of political belief or orientation in this country. You wouldn't know it from last night. Would you know that you're actually in the majority if you listen to Michael Savage and you agree with him? Would you know it if you pick up your local rag that they are in the teeniest minority of thought? You wouldn't know that. Would you know it by listening to CNN, ABC, CBS, NBC, or MSNBC, or the other channels of propaganda? You wouldn't know it. So we in the conservative ideology are in the majority. Remember that. We are the future. They are the past.
Savage.
Why not do it in the road? If it feels good, do it. From 1969 to 2009, one arc, here we are. If it wasn't for drugs, sex, and rock and roll, we wouldn't have the Marxists that we have now, the neocoms. Neocom, as opposed to neocon. We got rid of the neocons, now we have the neocoms. Now you got to ask yourself which was worse. That's up to you to decide. Depends on which side of the road you were on, left side, right side, all aboard. Doesn't matter. Who do you worship? I don't know. The important thing to know is that it all ends badly. It does not go out with a bang. It goes out with a whimper. The next thing you wake up and you find out it's a one world order. The dollar is gone. There's a new currency, a new language. It's not Esperanto, but English is dead. And you are a minority in your own country without any civil rights whatsoever. And you have a rotating presidency where there's not even a president anymore. It's sort of a rotating star chamber. Chavez, Obama, Ahmadinejad. You don't even know who's who, but they all look nice because they went to Venice together with Oliver Stone and the red carpet. And they're all movie stars. And what the important thing is that they look good and they march and they're tall. And although they have platform shoes, if they're short, doesn't matter. But they're made to look tall and they act tall because they are tall. Inside, they're taller than God himself. And therefore, the important thing is to not even care about it because Nancy Pelosi, the mother of America, is looking out for you. There is a woman who is continuously smiling. The super smile of Nancy Pelosi, more popular than a speeding bullet. Nancy Pelosi, the politician who wants to bring you. Do you understand that she wants to do you, not bring you? Do you understand that? That the do-gooders will do you every time, that the missionaries went to Hawaii to do good, and they did very well indeed, wound up owning 90% of the land stolen from the Hawaiians? All in the name of doing good. And just as any government that wants to do good will do well, you have to understand that First Lady, the woman who is never seen anymore because she is such a, well, let us say, negative, and therefore they don't show her at all, Michelle Obama. Notice she hasn't been seen. Notice she's the invisible First Lady. Have you noticed that? Have you noticed that? Have you noticed that she is never seen nor heard? And have you wondered why that is? Well, one of the reasons is because our Q factor is such that every time she speaks, his ratings go down. And since his ratings are so low and they can't go much lower right now, they have to rush it through and get that socialized medicine in that Ezekiel Emanuel wants so badly in order to make sure that the older man at 65 who has 40 years on the 25-year-old who's lived 40 years longer than a 25-year-old doesn't get the health care that the 25-year-old gets. And so they got to hurry it up, ram it through, pants, suits, ties, unpopular, the people be damned, let them drop dead. And the First Lady now is not seen nor heard, although it turns out that she has 26 servants. The salary is $1.75 million a year just for her servants, not including benefit packages. And it's hard to believe that she has a chief of staff, a deputy assistant to the president, a special assistant to the president, a special assistant director of communications, a deputy chief of the deputy chief, a deputy chief of staff to the chief of staff, a director and press secretary to Michelle, a director of scheduling to Michelle, a deputy director of policy and projects for Michelle, a deputy director and deputy social secretary for Michelle, a deputy director and deputy social secretary for Michelle, a deputy director of scheduling and events coordinator for Michelle, a deputy director of advance and trip director for Michelle, a special assistant and personal aide to Michelle, an associate director and deputy press secretary to Michelle, and a special assistant for scheduling and traveling for Michelle, an associate director of correspondence for Michelle, a deputy associate director of social office for Michelle, an executive assistant to the chief of staff to Michelle, a staff assistant to the social secretary for Michelle, a staff assistant for Michelle, and finally, and last but not least, in the 26 servants for Michelle, a deputy associate director of correspondence for Michelle. This is a woman who wants to, in her own small way, give back to the country that has given her so much. And that's why she left the job at a big law firm for a career in public service. Now, of course, you pay for it, but the important thing is that you don't know you pay for it. And since you don't know you pay for it, it doesn't matter. Let the people be damned. It doesn't matter that she says she's for the people. Well, she is in a way. I'm sure that the 26 servants that she has love her because they're people. Aren't they people?
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see all your life.
There's another song on that album that they played quite a bit, Blackbird. And there's a verse in the song Blackbird about blackbirds fixing their wings, rising up and flying. So Manson told his family that by Blackbird, come on, we know what the Beatles are talking about. They're talking about the black man. And they're telling the black man to rise up against the white
man. Terrible, terrible thing. So here we are, 1969 to 2009. Goes back actually to 1809. Some would say it goes back to 1409. Others would say it goes back to 09. And some would say it goes back beyond even that. What it is a class struggle. It's a struggle between those who have and those who have not. It has nothing to do with race. It has everything to do with have and have-nots. And since we are living east of Eden in the land of Nor, where there is no Eden and there is no place, we have to live with what we have and we have to have with what we live. And since we have now in the White House and around him some people who have never before been seen in such high places in America, we have to live with it, and we're trying to live with it. And so the people go out, and they protest, and they're called racist. They're called every name under the sun by Nancy Pelosi, by Harry Reid, and the other illegitimate, the people who don't belong in office at all, are telling the people they don't even belong to have the vote. They have no right to have the vote because they're actually doing what Obama says people should do, which is organize. Think about it. The people in the Tea Parties, the people who went out in the town hall meetings were actually community organized community. So everything that Obama says you should do, they did, only they didn't agree with him. Therefore, they were fascist, Nazis, un-American, thugs. Everything that the American people aren't, he said they are. Therefore, the government is the illegitimate, not the people. Now, you say it's anti-government, you're wrong. It's anti-illegitimate government. And I'll be darned before I stop telling you what I think is going on. I believe we've had a communist revolution in this country, and I believe it's a slow communist revolution, only you don't even know it. I know that the word socialist is being laughed at. When I first started using it years ago, no one even knew what a socialist was. 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago when I started using it, what's that? What are you talking about? Now everyone, socialist, so good. What you don't know is there's 30, 40 varieties of socialist. What's the big deal? He's a socialist. What's he hiding it for? The only question is what variety of socialist is Obama? Is it on the mild side? Is it on the British side? Is it on the middle side? Is it on the far side? Is it on the other side? And what side is it? Is it on the side of Joseph Stalin? Is it on the side of Adolf Hitler, socialist from Germany? Or is it the side of Joseph Stalin, socialist from Russia? Is it on the side of Pol Pot, the socialist from Cambodia? Or is it a mild sort of state socialism? Slightly higher taxes, more government interference, more government-run things, but the people are basically left alone. What side is it? Is it Chavez closing down radio stations, imprisoning people, taking property that isn't theirs? Is it Mugabe style? We don't know, because he doesn't know, because he's only a figurehead. He has no idea where this snowball could end. See, the avalanche has started. We don't know where the avalanche ends. That's the whole point. You don't understand it. There's been an avalanche in America. Only you don't know where it ends. You don't know how big an avalanche it is. The question is, who set off the dynamite? Well, you have to look at the currency, because he who controls the currency controls the people. Now, who controls the currency? Well, you have to look at the currency traders of the world. You have to look at the man who almost broke the Bank of England. You have to look at the man who almost broke the Malaysian currency. You have to look at the man who is no doubt trading in U.S. dollars to run the dollar into the toilet by betting against it while claiming to be for it, while putting an imposter in order to make sure that the people have no voice in the government. You got to look at the money trader. You got to look at the money changer in a temple, and you'll find out that if you actually look at the handprints on it, you'll see it goes all the way back to the very same evil genius who almost broke the British pound, in the humble opinion of the man who sits with a microphone and an undershirt on the second floor, watching the world go by underneath his feet. And that's the whole story. It's a talk show host, one man looking at the world, one man's opinion of no power, no importance, not heard from by ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, or Fox. Therefore, he doesn't exist, but he has an audience of millions. No one knows how. How could it be that he has an audience of millions that so fanatically listen to his every word, hang on his every word, want to hear every word, can't wait to hear every word, get up in the morning hoping he's on that day, don't want fill-ins, don't want replays. Where's the man? Where is he? Why doesn't he talk? How come he can't do it every day, all day? Why do I listen to him? What's wrong with me? He's right. I know he's right. When I first heard him, I hated him. I thought he's an extremist. Now I realize I was crazy. He was right. Now I realize the danger we're in. Hey, man, where can I buy a band in Britain? I don't know. It's nowhere in a bookstore. Why not? How come they publish books by unknown doofus so-called conservatives and you can't find Michael Savage's books in a bookstore? I don't know. Is it some kind of conspiracy that New York publishers are in business to make money, won't touch a New York Times best-selling author? How come he's never on television? How come? All aboard, Khmer Rouge, here we come. Beware the government media complex. You have Oderman on MSNBC. You have Oderman and Softball, and on the other side of the coin, you have Leprechaun and Wallbanger. They all allegedly hate each other, but in fact, if you flip the coin, it's either side, what do you want, throw it around four sides to the coin, because it's all one media complex. It's sort of a Rubik's Cube. The Rubik's Cube has four heads on it. Not as many heads as you would think, but there's four heads, and you think liberal, conservative, Republican, Democrat. No, my friend, Moloch owns them all. Watch out for the government media complex, because you think that the Leprechaun and the Wallbanger oppose Oderman and Softball. What you don't know is they're all flipped by the man, the peasant Avante, who controls the dice. The man who controls the dice is the man who controls the TV, the radio, the newspapers, the magazines, the books you read, the food you eat, the pharmaceuticals you take.
Savage.
Loud shout interrupts Obama's speech. See my picture of the San Francisco Bay Bridge under construction only on michaelsavage.com. It exceeds any pictures you've seen because it was shot from a boat the other day rather than from a news source. On michaelsavage.com, there's a story you must read. Acorn helps pimp set up child brothel and evade IRS. Now, the reason I haven't talked about that today, because Acorn is a corrupt organization. It was set up by Rahm Emanuel and the Obama machine in order to get the imposter elected. And although they have a tape now, purely on tape, that the Acorn Group has helped a pimp set up a child brothel and evade the IRS, there will be no investigation because we're living in a Obama republic. Normally you would think I would say a banana republic, but since we don't grow bananas here, we only grow small Obamas, I will now call this an Obama republic. So don't miss that on michaelsavage.com. There are many other stories that you're going to want to read. I want to go to calls on any other topic except this, okay? New York City, WOR. Brian, welcome to the program.
Hi, Michael. You and I have something in common. I have an old Cadillac like you do.
What year?
I have a 78 Eldorado Baritz with the moonroof, supposedly.
Well, you see, yours is new compared to mine. I have a 65.
You have the one with the glove compartment is right in the middle of the dashboard, which was very unusual.
That's interesting. And you know, there's a button in there to open the trunk. Very convenient.
There's also, if you ordered a 65 Cadillac.
Well, that was useful for the guys who use the trunk to transport bodies to the New Jersey area. You know, you could just press the button when you arrive, you know. I understand Cadillac made an option available only in New Jersey that the floor of the trunk dropped open to let bodies drop out. I'm just joking.
Well, there was an unusual thing about the 65 Cadillac. If you ordered a 65 Cadillac factory limo, it was actually the 64 model.
And?
Well, it was a completely different body style. They made a mistake.
Anyway, look, you know something? I'm reaching a point of wanting to get rid of it. I'll tell you why. I have a long plan to create a Savage Museum, and I was going to put the Cadillac in it as, like, you know, a centerpiece, the red convertible, because it was used on a stage show and this and that. But I just took it into a local mechanic. I spent another $900 on it. It was stinking like from gasoline, and he took the tank out and refixed it and put in new hoses, and it still smells. I mean, I hate to run my own car down, but these old cars, Brian, there's always something dripping out of them. Isn't that true?
Oh, it's a lot of work, and it's a lot of expense. It's true.
It's like an old man. I mean, he has to wear Depends for a reason. I'm just joking. There's always something coming out of the bottom of that car. It's, you know, you want to love the thing because it rides like a baby carriage on the road. It's so the wide track, red convertible. But, you know, then I get into my new car, and it's like, oh, my God, is the new technology so much better? You know, yeah, it was a big, beautiful car, but, man, it's maintaining them. It's a nice car, but you can't, practically, they stink in a garage. Albany, New York. Alan, welcome to the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Yes, good evening, Dr. Savage. Calling from Saratoga Lake, New York, working on a boat, I'm a boat mechanic, and I've seen something tonight I've never seen before in the 40 years I've been doing this, a catalytic converter in a boat engine. And
Who put it in?
Volvo Penta, and it's a little four-cylinder motor, and the exhaust manifold is about three times the diameter of a normal exhaust manifold.
You're a mechanic. Are you familiar with the Yanmar three-cylinder 29-horsepower engine?
Yes, they use them as auxiliaries in sailboats.
Well, I have one in a 20-foot boat that I own. It's the finest little engine I've had. I mean, I love the big Cummins engines on my big boat. But I have a little boat with a 29-horsepower, three-cylinder engine. It's clean, doesn't stink. Really wonderful little engine. How do they get it to be so clean?
Because it's not made in America.
Oh, come on. You mean we can't make a good engine anymore? Well, I don't know. They copied us. Maybe they succeeded in destroying the country. And they make good television sets. And originally, we had American sets that were great. So what are you going to do about it? Here's another story that you shouldn't miss that's up around. It's on my website right now. And that is the South African runner is a hermaphrodite. The controversy over Castor Semenya's biology has caused huge divisions with South American politicians calling slurs that she is a man racist and sexist. I guess that's a threefer right there. But the winner of this race, phones and computers making teens dumb. No kidding. Like, you think so? Like, teenagers on phones, you think they're smart because they yak? Like, they're not reading Plato? Like, you know, like? Let's see. Trust in legislative branch at all-time low, according to Gallup. That's right. No, we trust Nancy Pelosi, who sucks on candies with a fixed surgical smile, to be honest. And that we trust. What else do we have on my... Oh, British commando dies in raid to free New York Times reporter. That's a heartbreaker. That's really something. The Brits, who have banned Michael Savage, have admitted another war criminal to their nation. A former Bosnian Serb leader convicted of war crimes has been sent to the United Kingdom to serve out the remaining years of his sentence. He is permitted in the UK, and I'm not. It just shows you who's running the country. As I've said to you before, their banning me says more about the Labour government and about Britain under the Labour government than it does about Michael Savage. Let me tell you. Let's pray that the Conservatives win and do the right thing. The emerging axis of Iran and Venezuela. Oh, ho-hum, like I didn't tell you about it 2 years ago. Now Moscow might give Venezuela an arms loan. Oh, hello. How long did I tell you Chavez is a dictator? How long ago did I tell you that Chavez and Iran are a danger? How long did I tell you there's a noose tightening around America? How long did I tell you we've had a communist takeover? And if you don't believe me, there's nothing I can do for you. If you don't believe me, there's nothing I can do for you. Obama is siding with Chavez the dictator and Castro the dictator in the Honduras situation. It's going on right in front of your eyes. And I realize you can't follow it all. There's too much to follow. When a corrupt government is so corrupt on so many different levels, from international to national to local, it's very hard for the average person to keep their head above water. So go to michaelsavage.com and see the lead story. Acorn helps pimp set up child brothel and evade IRS. See if Obama does anything.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I stumbled upon a movie that has to rank now in the top bunch. What's the name of it? Red Belt. Now, Red Belt is about a martial arts teacher in Los Angeles, played by a black actor whose name I forget. I've seen him before. It's an African name, and I actually tuned it in because I saw his name. I recognize it, but I can't remember. The guy is a fabulous actor. And he runs a little martial arts studio. And he gets into financial trouble, and he's got to, you know, compete. It sounds pretty typical of martial arts movies that you've seen before, but it's very atypical. First of all, it was written by David Mamet, and David Mamet has a checkered past as a film writer. I didn't like him many years ago because he had a shtick with the repeating. You know, his shtick was repeating sentences, and I didn't go for it. He's cut out the repeating of the sentences, and the man has really crafted a masterpiece here called Red Belt. Chiwetel Ejiofor, and I'm probably mispronouncing the actor's name. Is that correct? Chiwetel Ejiofor? Yeah, I was as close as I can get it. He's very, the correct word for his, for the reason he's appealing as an actor, Chiwetel Ejiofor, is because his face is sympathetic. It engages you. In other words, he pulls you in. He can emote. In other words, he's a real actor. He can emote. You look at him and you want to know what he's going to say. The way I emote. In other words, my voice emotes some feelings in you, which is why I'm so popular and why you listen to this show. He, as an actor, can provoke emotion with his face. Plus, he's built great, and he probably is a real martial artist. So anyway, it's all about the world of mixed martial arts and the corruption within this world. That's what the author alleges, how the fights are really fixed and this and that. And you have to watch the movie, how they draw this simple guy, this honest, simple, honorable man into fighting by screwing him over financially and making him fight. And when he finds out it's fixed, what happens? And it's the whole Brazilian martial arts group is in it. A lot of famous people are in it, either playing themselves or others. Let me see what else is notable other than the dialogue and the pacing is superb. The orchestrations, the choreography of the martial arts work in the movie, incredible. The women are beautiful. They're Brazilian women. They're really beautiful. The lighting is superb. The underworld of L.A. is played well with the shysters, the loan sharks, the bad lawyers, the verminous lawyer. I mean, the whole thing is done well. I really recommend it. It's called Red Belt. Oh, wait. Here's the part. Movies rarely bring you to a point where you feel – I mean, you like it. Let's say you're enjoying it. But when you actually get an emotional reaction where, like, your eyes, let's say, you know, a little emotion. I had it with this movie toward the end, and I'm not going to give away the end. But in the end, there's a scene where some Japanese jiu-jitsu experts, obviously the real McCoy, are included in the film. And you look at these guys' faces. The faces of these guys alone are worth the entry ticket into this movie. If you're into masculinity, let's put it to you this way. Real men, I don't know how else to put it. With real faces as opposed to the ha-ha face that you're used to with politicians and the big smiles, the fake faces. I've told you before that real men don't smile. I don't mean they don't occasionally smile, but the actual face of an actual man is grim because they understand that each step is a potential step into the abyss. You know, we all take the long ride on the black boat and the black lake on a black night, and we never come back from it. We know that. But you see, most men from other cultures who've come from hard backgrounds, Their faces actually project that grimness. It doesn't matter how much money they've made or they didn't make. Poor or rich, they still have a grim view of reality. And they're very protective of their wives and children, which is why they make great husbands, as opposed to guys who go to, let's say, Oberlin College and come out and they take a course in Beavis and Butthead 101. But no, go watch Red Belt. It was on Flick. I don't know. Showtime. Something else. I don't know. Stars Channel. Red Belt. It came out of nowhere. Guy who plays it with that Italian actor plays one of the sleazy nightclub owners. He's moved down tremendously over the years. Montana. Joe Montana. Is that his name? Not Joe Montana. You know, Montana, whatever.
Montana.
He's a good actor, but, you know, he had his day. 10 years ago, he's playing leads. Now he's playing triple C leads. But he's still projecting. And the sleazy loan shark is good with the buggy eyes. He's great. He looks like Madoff's cousin. I mean, he's a little bit of a stereotype here and there. You know, the loan shark is a Madoff job. But nevertheless, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. And I recommend it. Red belt. There's a black belt. And then there's a red belt. But the Japanese guys in this movie, the faces on these guys... You talk about samurai, and you talk about samurai faces, and the tattoo. Let's say you're into tattoos, which I'm not into. I do appreciate beautiful tattoo work, but I wouldn't have it on my own body because the Bible prohibits it. I mean, to be honest with you, thou shalt not mark your body, period. So it's one of the things. My business, not your business. Do what you want. You want a tattoo? Go ahead. I don't care. It's your business anyway. You're not going to care what I say. There's certain things I worry about. That's certain things I don't worry about. I mean, I eat pork and shrimp. But I don't want a tattoo. I mean, you could say it's hypocritical. You know, if you're going to violate one law, you may as well violate all of them. I mean, you could say that. But I would say that eating a shrimp is not the same as killing your neighbor's wife, for example. If you, I made a jump there. It was like a jump in logical joke. It's like a logical jump joke. You know what I'm saying? But in other words, you could violate a little bit. It's not the same as the Big Ten on a regular basis. Just because you eat a shrimp doesn't mean that you're going to go and do your neighbor's wife, right? That's actually the best of all of it. You look at them all, and it all boils down in the Bible to, you know, do unto others as you have them do unto you. An old man taught me that 30 years ago. He said, I don't know about religion. He said, I've studied them all. I met an old guy in a ship once, blind, old man, 80 years old. I thought 80 was old then, you know. Hey, old man, I was the young guy. Everyone was partying upstairs. I was, like, bored of the partying. I was looking for meaning on a big trip to Europe. I went down to the old man, sat in the bunk. We had four to a cabin. There were three young guys and one old man going back to Holland. And I looked at him, and he was blind, and he looked up. So I said, what is the meaning of life, old man? I was into that kind of stuff. Old man, what is the meaning of life? It was like, you know, I was on a trek. I figured old men knew. Most old men don't know nothing because they were young once. They knew nothing when they were young. How could they know something when they're old? Exceptional men know something when they're young, and they know a lot more when they're old. Ordinary men know nothing ever. Anyway, so I look at him, and I say, old man, what is the meaning of life? I figured, who knows? Maybe I was high or something. I don't know. So he looks up at me with, you know, staring blue eyes because he was blind, the poor guy. And he says to me, the meaning of life? The meaning of life? He says, well, young man, I don't really know. He says, I guess you're born holding it and you die holding it. He says, all right, that's the best I can do on a big trip to Europe. That's the knowledge I got from the old man of what's the meaning of life. So I figured I better figure it out for myself. And I pretty much have it figured out for myself, not for you. I have nothing to offer you other than my own views of the world. And it's why I've said to you for 15 years on the radio, this is one man's opinion. I am not a politician. I am not a Republican. I am not a Democrat. I created the niche in radio called Independent Conservative. And here I be. Party of one, Michael Savage, banned in Britain.
Savage.
Isn't how many times must the cannonballs fly before they fall out of the band? The answer, my friend, is a blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
Could you play instead of that version? Could you play the woman who sang it? I met in the elevator in the Green Street Garage 30 years ago. That's right, that one. I don't know what's about her name. She did a better job. I know. She did a better version. He wrote it, right?
How many seasons must the white dove sail?
All right, another Pied Piper led millions of people off the cliff of insanity. Turn that off, too. How about Pantera? Let's get some hard metal, heavy metal playing here. I haven't done that in a while on Savage Nation. Nothing's moving me. What's wrong with me today? Try Rammstein. Let's see if that does anything for me on the Savage Nation. Since no one cares about communism in America, I'm going to play. That's better. Now, why does that move me? Loud as a man. Some sound.
Deine Größe macht mich klein.
Du darfst mein Straffer sein. Big is good. Comes to heavy metal, I'm a, shall I say, sound queen. Why is that funny?
I don't know.
It struck me as funny. It's funny as Pat Campbell in the ballet costume. About as funny as Jackie Mason pumping iron. I mean, come on.
Bestrafe mich. Bestrafe mich.
Be as funny as Ann Coulter playing Martha Washington.
Und ich denk, nein.
Anyone like January Jones in Mad Men?
Wow,
like Grace Kelly. How does anyone have a name like January Jones? I can't figure it out. It's like a radio name, January Jones. What's your name, January? Hello? Stunning. But, all right, turn it off already. I'll talk about anything other than politics. I can't take it anymore. And the reason I can't take it is because you've got criminals and gangsters running America. And you actually don't even know it. I mean, it's unbelievable to me. You actually listen to a word they say and you don't know who they are, what they're doing? It's unbelievable. You don't read it. You didn't read It Can't Happen Here by Sinclair Lewis. So you don't know that there's a gang that has taken over America. I read it to you once before. It went over your heads, under your heads, under your feet, in your arms. You know, in the T-zone. It hit you in the T-zone and you let it go right through you. Should I read it again? Nah, I don't think it matters. I think it's over. I think it's all over, basically. I see 20 years from now, everyone playing checkers, houses unplugged from the grid. In other words, Cuba. All 50 states sort of like a Cuba. No economy, houses that are fading, no paint on the houses, no services, spies on every block, answering only to Obama and his S.A., and anyone who speaks out is either taken to a prison camp or shot, disappeared. And you wouldn't even care because at that point it'll be too late. No one will be left to say a word. That's where this leads. He's a young man yet. Remember that. The old communists that he used to get into power will be gone. And they're rather moderate compared to him. This guy's an extremist, in my opinion. Maybe I should read for you Sinclair Lewis's It Can't Happen Here about the nightmarish vision of a future in America where a right-wing party emerges that takes over America. But everything he said about a dictatorship arising from the right did not happen. But now we have a tyranny of a dictatorship that has arisen under Barack Hussein Obama. They're doing it rather, you know, boiling pot method. You know, you don't even see what's happening here. The big linchpin here is the healthcare thing. If he gets away with this, it's over. He will control you from the cradle to the grave, and you will be dependent upon the government from cradle to grave for your medication and for your medical care. And at that point, the economy, I would say this represents not one-seventh of the economy, because there are no limits on what people can demand from the system, and because this communist government will want to expand their power and control through the medical system, it could become 30% of GDP to pay for this. So it could be one-third of the economy devoted to health care. Federal costs will actually drive up the cost of health care. So if I made these points, and if you learned that Obama makes private medical insurance illegal, which it does, came out in Investor's Business Daily, what more do you need to know? Sotomayor should have been stopped. She divided America racially. She's racially divisive. She also took the side of the, if you remember, the Puerto Rican situation. It was a big deal. But there's no question that Sotomayor is unqualified. Let's put aside her politics. The woman is not at the level of a Supreme Court justice. liberal or conservative, you want a judicial excellence and eloquence, right? Where is it in her? Where is it? It's like a Maoist judge. They took someone from the lower ranks of a court, and they said, well, now you're going to be a justice on the Supreme Court because we need to make the Supreme Court, you know, a little more communistic. So, see, Obama never worked in a factory. He was just picked by some powerful people in the world to become president. But he says the top income earners are just lucky. But you may not know it, but this lucky talk show host once worked in an ice cream factory. Let me explain to you what it's like. It's probably the worst job in the world, being on a production line in a factory. I should remind you, it's a tough job, and you have to have compassion and sympathy for poor people or people who don't speak the language who take these jobs. It's murder. It was in Long Island City, and it was an ice cream factory, and it was a hot summer. And the production line goes around in a conveyor belt. And I and a few of my friends worked in that factory along with, I think it was Puerto Rican women, by the way, largely on the production line. And the pit boss was an Italian, about 5'1", with a big mouth and mean. You had to do this for hours on end. And let's say your mind was elsewhere, which it normally is, but you missed and dropped the bar. And he would stop the line, this guy up on the stand, and he'd start screaming, "You moron, you idiot. Look what you did to all the other workers, you stupid moron, you. You do it again, you're costing them money. Now start the line again." See, that's how America worked. When America was really good, we had guys like that pit boss who could call you a moron when you were an idiot or a moron, your mind was distracted. Today, of course, you can't call anyone a moron, even if they're a moron. Instead, you turn them into a home secretary in England, or you turn them into a senator or a congressman here from Minnesota. So that's that. Okay, moving on. I have to say something that's a little egotistical, but you'll understand that as well. And that is this. Despite the detractors in the conservative media, because they're the only ones I'm referring to, I am the champion. I am the champion of talk radio. Nobody has exceeded Michael Savage. I wear the belt. I am the heavyweight champion of the field of talk radio. And I know this. I've known this for a long time. Nobody has beat me. Nobody can beat me. None of them can get in the ring with me. And let me tell you something. I know that, and no one can take this championship away from me. Nobody. There's never going to be anyone like me ever again in the history of talk radio. And there's a couple of reasons it happened. It was all happenstance, or was it all fate? I don't know. But if you analyze the top tier of talk radio performers in the United States of America, you'll understand why the depth of this show is what it is, and you'll understand why you get a monodimensional effect from the other shows. And that's, I'm going to leave it at that. I don't want to sit here anymore with this. I just have to say a lot of these things. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
I never picked him out. He picked me out.
They trained for 8 hours a day. That's the only person the dog knew.
Their smell and hearing is so acute.
I couldn't imagine going into a jungle without a dog.
I'd know they were close before they ever got there.
But oh my God, they're shooting their bullets.
They saved hundreds of lives, including mine.
There isn't a day that goes by that I don't think of that dog.
All right, so one of my favorite channels is Military History, or the History Channels in general, or National Geographic. I stumbled upon War Dogs of the Pacific documentary story of the Marine dog platoons of World War II. And they show these men, the Marines, they must be in their 80s when they were interviewed for this, or older. And these are the men who saved us from Hitler. These are the men without whom we would be speaking German or we'd be lampshades. These are the men who, when you look at them, I mean, they bring tears to your eyes. And then they flash back to these men in Saipan when they were in their 20s. You see the young man and the old man. And when they were young men, they were dog handlers. And the dogs were largely either, what were they, Doberman Pinschers or German Shepherds. And the interesting part was is that they were given to these men by ordinary American citizens, and they were trained to kill. They were trained to hunt out Japanese in the jungles. And you look at the tales of devotion and bravery and sacrifice by the dog handlers themselves and the dogs, and the bond between the men and the dogs from Saipan, Okinawa, and Iwo Jima, These are the best, and just the best men America has ever seen. And we still have many of them, believe me, in the military. The best men in the world. And that's why I supported them when Bush permitted them to be hung out and dried with false court martials. Some of them are still hanging out there. I gave my own money. Many of you contributed money to Colonel Chesani's cause because Bush could have pardoned them. He never did. Instead, he pardoned drug dealers and other criminals. It's unbelievable what these two administrations have done to our military. So when I look back, when I watch these documentaries of World War II, and I see the faces, these are ordinary Americans fighting the hardest kind of fight there is, you know, hand-to-hand combat, smoking out the Japanese in caves, also very hard men. And you reach a point where you see the dogs. Now, these guys are now doing jungle fighting. They're afraid of snipers, Japanese snipers. A man's senses can only see and hear and smell so far. But a dog's senses are hundreds of times greater, obviously. So a dog is, I think, 400 times greater sense of scent than a man. Never mind the hearing, okay? So they're in the jungle now. They're creeping along, hoping they don't get killed from a Japanese sniper, let us say, on Okinawa or Iwo Jima or Saipan. And they need a dog. So they got the dogs now. The dogs now are let go, and the dogs go ahead of them. The dog can hear a Japanese sniper in a tree 100 yards away, so they knock him out of the tree. Many, many American men were able to live, come home, contribute to society, create a family because of the dogs. They saved many lives in the Pacific. And if you watch this, and then you see that the Japanese learned that the dogs were real threats to them, they started shooting the dogs first, and then they flash back to one of the older gentlemen who was a Marine in one of these theaters of operation. And he says, after they shot one of our dogs, we really got mad. And you see the grit come out in this guy. And, you know, when he says we really got mad. But then you see other scenes in there that are going to rip your guts out. For example, one of the dog handlers, remember, these dogs were trained to kill, number one. They were ordinary dogs from households, voluntarily given to the military. They were trained to attack and kill by military dog handlers. They had to be trained to kill. So now they're trained to kill. They're brought out into the islands to help fight the Japanese in World War II. And so they're also trained to kill anyone who tries to hurt their handler. Talk about, you know, loyalty. They show one of the handlers getting shot. The Marine medic goes in to treat him. The dog lets the medic treat the handler. When the man dies, the dog suddenly becomes atavistic, growls, snaps, and threatens the Americans who want to come near the dead body. You look at a thing like this, and, you know, you have to understand, you have to own a dog to understand what this scene is. That the dog, trained to protect that man, will protect that man's corpse with his life. It's unbelievable. Then you see men whose dogs get killed who go to pieces. You see men feeding the dogs the last of their own rations. You see men giving the dog the last bit of food that they have. The dog becomes the last thing they have that they love in the world, in the middle of the hell that they were put. Then you see scenes of men who go to pieces. There was one scene in passing. I had seen something like this once before in my life, of men who break down in combat. I saw this before. I may have seen it in passing in some of the in documentaries. But there was one scene that was astounding. Now, you're talking about the hardest men who were sent out into these island fights, hand-to-hand combat, the most horrendous, gut-tearing stuff you could ever imagine. We can only imagine what these men had to live through. I don't know if men could do this anymore. I really don't know if anyone could do it in the America of today. I truly don't know if they could do this anymore. I wonder if there are men left that could do this or they're all locked up in Pelican Bay. I'm not sure anymore. I watched this show, and you see a man who broke down from the combat, from the ugliness, from the horror of the blood and the guts and the killing and the murder. And he's crying like a baby, sucking his thumb. It's unbelievable to see this in the middle of this. And another Marine is holding him with his arm around him. And he's sitting there crying and shuddering like a baby, sucking his own thumb. He had a total crack up in the midst of this ugly, horrendous combat. Now, this was in passing. But, you know, we're talking about something else, which is the dog thing, the war dogs of the Pacific. But I'm bringing that up as a side note. Okay, so now the war ends. The Army shoots their dogs. You hear this? The Army decides that all the dogs that fought so loyally in World War II should be killed. They shoot all the dogs that they used. The Marines refused to go along with the program. In other words, in those days, they would not be obotomized. The Marines said, go to hell, we're not shooting our dogs, we'll shoot you first. So the Marines said, we're not shooting them. We're not going to go along with the Obama program of the day, in other words, just because Big Brother told us to. We'll shoot you first. We're not killing our dogs. They were our best friend. They kept us alive, dropped dead. So the Marine Corps backs up. The fat asses back home who decided to shoot the dogs suddenly, the fat asses back in Camp Lejeune who never fought, suddenly get frightened of the Marines and say, all right, we won't kill the dogs. Meanwhile, they have 540 killer dogs in their hands, and they don't know what to do with them. So you know what the men say? We will retrain them to become domesticated again. And they work 12, 15 hours a day, and they do teach old dogs new tricks, and they retrain them to be able to integrate back with families. So out of the 540 or so dogs that fought with the men in the Pacific who were killers, trained to kill, only four had to be euthanized. It's a story that is astounding, and I would highly recommend that you try to catch War Dogs of the Pacific on the Military History Channel when it's replayed, and I don't know when it'll be replayed. The historical footage and never-before-seen photos are astounding. And it was done by a director named Harris Dunn, who was a graduate of the USC School of Cinema, and he earned a degree in film production. But he did, thrillers such as, family comedies, Bonjour, Buddy. But this feature documentary directing debut with War Dogs of the Pacific about the Marine War dog handlers of World War II is astounding. Any dog lover should watch this, and it'll give you a new appreciation for not only the intelligence of dogs, the loyalty of dogs, but the devotion and the bravery and sacrifice of the United States Marine Corps. This is the Savage Nation. Phone number 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to Washington, D.C. WTNT. Jay, go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
Yes, Michael, I've been waiting for somebody to talk about this subject a long time. Actually, one of the Marines that was instrumental in keeping those dogs from being killed was a gentleman named Colonel William Putney. Putney has a book you can read. It's called, of all things, it's called Semper Fi. It's about the third War Dog Company, and it discusses those many subjects that you've just gone over.
But he stood up to the Marine Corps brass and said, we're not killing them, I guess. That's what he had to do.
Correct. And his men loved him. All those families that got him. But he was alive up until about 4 years ago and passed away. But
there goes the last, where are they today? When they go and fight in Iraq, if they actually do the right job that they're trained to do, they get court-martialed by George Bush in the last administration and probably with Michael Mullen now in the Joint Chiefs of Staff. A guy's afraid to fire a gun without consulting a manual.
He would have been outed. I mean, he would have never been on the Admiral staff or flag officer back then. I don't really say, but this Colonel Putney, as far as I'm concerned, he should have got the Medal of Honor. But read that book, Semper Fi. And the one thing I want to say,
let me ask you, Jay, where is the dog cemetery that I saw at the end of the documentary? They apparently have a cemetery of these dogs somewhere. Where is that?
Oh, boy, that's a good question. I couldn't believe it.
It was an actual war memorial cemetery for these heroic dogs. It was unbelievable. Thank you for the call. Who says he knew Colonel Putney?
Yes, I knew Dr. Putney. Guam was where they have the statue.
In Guam, that's where the dog's cemetery is.
Cemetery there. I met Dr. Savage Dr. Putney, when I was like 23 years old, he was 50 years old. We were the best of friends. We used to play golf together once a week.
What did he tell you about the whole dog program, Steve, that you could share with the audience today?
You know what? We became such good friends. I used to go. He had a dog kennel down in, let's say, Canoga Park. that I used to go down with him all the time.
And I mean, this was after the war, of course.
We're talking 1973, 74.
So what I'm hearing is he continued his love for dogs into the latter part of his life, long after the war.
I think he passed away about 4 years ago. Yeah, he was a veterinarian when he passed away about 4 years ago.
Oh, he was a vet. The colonel was a veteran?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, was a veterinarian? The vet was a veterinarian.
Oh, yes.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, big time. He talked to
me. And Steve, did he tell you any stories of the war that would be worth sharing right now?
Yes. He says, you know, when we're out in the walking around in the bushes and everything else and leading dogs, he was so much the leader because he was the lieutenant. I think he went up to, like, captain or, you know, I don't remember, but, you know what?
That's okay. I'm going to tell. Thank you very much for that sharing. Now he brought back a memory from the documentary. Let me throw one more piece in. After the men had shown how good these dogs were in combat, they were rewarded with another stripe. They were moved up the ranks. And then the commander said to them, but because you've moved up from corporal, you can no longer be a dog handler because that's for a lower ranked man. The men, almost to a man, ripped the stripe off their body and said, we'd rather remain a corporal in order to stay with our dogs. No, thank you. You can keep your stripes.
Savage.
I've told you what I wanted to say. I've laid it out for you as clear as a bell. I've given you my opinion on a couple of topics. I've asked a couple of questions. And now we're going to go to something a little lighter because I can't sustain this kind of a focus for hours and hours and hours a day. If you want to call me on this, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. I will tell you that living well is the best revenge. I mean, I can talk about lifestyle issues just to calm down a little bit because I do know how to relax. When I do go out, I know how to relax when I go out. And it's very rare. Maybe once a week I'll go out and, you know, I sit and relax. I have a bottle of wine. Actually, I'm drinking wine again. If you want to talk about alcohol, I mean, it leaves me with a hangover, but it feels good going down. Isn't that interesting? Why does wine, no matter what I drink, leave me with a hangover, but beer or vodka doesn't? It's an interesting phenomenon. I know the answer. It's the complexities, the fusel oils in wine. No matter what you get today, it's been tricked up in the winemaker's chemistry laboratory. They're not making wine the way. It's all like chemical. But I had Aliotta's. I hadn't been there in a while. And Richie prepared for me himself. He went in the kitchen. I mean, it's one of the busiest kitchens he ever seen. I remember when I was a kid, there was a restaurant in New York called Mama Leone's. And they used to turn out, I don't know, thousands of meals a night or something like that. And I used to marvel at it. I once read a book about how in the heck could anyone cook. So I try to cook a meal for a couple of people. And to get the bread and the meal and the everything on the table at once is very hard. So how do you do it for hundreds of people at a time over and over again? So every time I go in the kitchen of a very busy restaurant, I'm always awed by it, frankly, because it's amazing the skill it takes to produce everything to come out on time. So I ordered mussels marinara, which I got to tell you, there's no better mussels marinara in the world that I've tried than in that restaurant, Aliotta's. You say, well, why am I talking about it? Because I'm sick and tired of talking about the ACLU. I'm sick and tired of telling you what Obama's doing to America. I'm sick and tired of talking to myself and nobody else about being banned in Britain. I'm sick of telling you to go buy Banned in Britain. You know what? Don't buy the book. Do buy the book. It's not going to change, you know, my life one way or the other. I want you to read Banned in Britain so that you can see the story, the modern-day story of David versus Goliath. And I don't know how this ends. Don't you understand it's not over yet? Don't you understand that the story isn't over? It's an ongoing story. It's a work in progress. That's what I'm saying to you. And by buying the book and by owning the book, you're a part of this history. So I can only sustain this for so long. So as I say, Friday night I went into the place. I ordered mussels marinara and a bottle of wine, good bread. And frankly, I was happy to be left alone and sit at a table and look at people and just eat and drink. But the mussels marinara is a magic. I didn't even eat anything else. I will tell you, I brought home a hamburger for Teddy, and he ate it for 3 nights in a row. He loves it. The dog really likes his meat. No matter how you try to give him that kibble, the kibble, They don't like it as much as they like meat dogs. The truth is they're pure carnivores. They go berserk. It's like children who are raised as vegetarians. You put a chicken leg around them, they'll attack it on the table. And speaking of attacking it, I have an assistant that works, two assistants. So one of the young ladies, my computer wasn't working. I asked her to touch the button on the computer for me. The dog attacked her hand. He didn't bite her. He mouthed her. The other assistant, the young man, if he comes in here, he goes after his feet. Teddy does not like anybody in the radio studio. This is, I don't know, they have these instincts. You can't get mad at him. I said, okay, Ted, they're friends, but he doesn't understand that. If anybody touches anything to do with my equipment or comes in the room, they're enemies. That's why they're wonderful. That's why they're loyal. That's why they're great. That's why they're not cats. That's why they're dogs. Amaryllis, what's on your mind about Teddy? What's this about?
Hi, Dr. Savage. I absolutely love your show because, I mean, you so many categories, human interest, politics. But anyway, what I was calling about is I love the story where you had your boat out on the ocean and you hit a dry dock and Teddy refused to release himself. You remember that story?
You mean when I went up on a sandbar and I was we were stranded till the tide changed 6 hours later, and you say the dog held his water.
Yeah,
it was in Richmond Harbor, the entrance to Richmond Harbor in Richmond, California, which has the worst markings of any I've ever seen. We went up on a sandbar and we were stuck and couldn't move till the tide came up. And the two dogs were so well behaved it was astounding. It's as though they knew it was a problem and they had to do something different. Normally I wouldn't have cared. You know, boats in the old days had a portion of the anatomy of the boat called the poop deck. You know what that's for, don't you, Amaryllis?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I wouldn't have minded if Teddy had used the poop deck, but he didn't. This is the Savage Nation. So what do you want to talk about? Food, mussels, marinara? You don't need Viagra. What do you want to talk about? Marinara sauce? You know, I should do a whole show on how to make a proper marinara sauce when you think about it. I don't like sweet sauces. But I frankly happen to know that even if people say there's no sweet, there is always a little bit in it. I prefer tart. Everything should be very tomato-y. And even cheated, I went back on tomato sauce. I can't give everything. I realized, I thought about it over the weekend. I said, what, are you crazy? You're going to give up dairy? Okay, no big deal. Even though I love Parmesan cheese and Romano cheese and provolone. So, all right, I can give that up. I never like milk. I don't eat ice cream. I can't stand it. But to give up tomato and tomato-based products, it's like, how can I do all of this at once?
Savage.